Now, until we have a reference point, we have nothing whatever to discuss, have we? Right. Now, the least mark we can make is a point, is it not? And we do it first as an idea in our mind. And then I will take it from my mind, push it along my arm, and publish it there. Now, in order to publish it, I had to move my arm through space. And I have a stopwatch. I wasn't able to bring it out and wind it up. But I could have pressed it to start it and pressed it to stop it between here and there. And then I would have known how many seconds it took me to carry the idea from my mind along my arm to the plane of the sellotape feature.
Whatever
it is
not, it never comes to be. So is the dot not a dot
before
it's a dot?
Didn't we say we had an idea of a dot in the mind before we put it down here? Right, but the idea that the dot is already there eternally, is it not? Yes. It's in the mind before it gets onto the cellophane. There's an answer to that by Plato if you want it. The source of all ideas is the vibrating infinite continuum of sentient power. All the ideas are already eternally there. Yes. Now chaos is simultaneous co-presentation of all of it, including all the hidden orders that could be abstracted from it. Right. Now one of them is a dot. As it happens, it's the most economic mark we can make. It uses the least ink. And being Scottish on my mother's side, I prefer the dot to a line. Because it uses less ink. Right, so I put the dot down there. But it's already there in my consciousness. Nothing can come to be except that which already is. Coming to be is making it manifest. Now, supposing I write the word emit like that and then read it Hebraica. That's time. I emit. I output from the field of consciousness, which is not expressed, a little bit of it called dot. Yes?
Yes.
Time is an emission. I could diagram it like this. Here is a plane in eternity, because eternity contains everything, and there is a little bend, and there is a dot on the end of that bend. And when I look at this way, I've got a dot, but it's really a bend in eternity. Eternity is a field of sentient power. If we bend it, that bend itself can be looked at as a point. We can ignore all this and this and look at that and say there is a point. But it's there before we look at it. It cannot come to be unless it is. Recognize means know it again. Now, in Platonism, you have a simple statement that it's a numeral world, a world of names, and the names are sound structures of form. And they're all co-eternal. But when I utter the word dot, I abstract from an infinity of possibilities. Like Aunt Agatha. Yes? Grandma Gray. And dot. They're terms.
So the only responsibility an individual has is for the idea he admits.
Right. And admit means what? To put. And you're back in time, in the mitt, aren't you? As soon as you mit, transmit, and so on, you have posited out of the universal balanced field a particular superstress. Yes? You, John Gerrard, have a superstress pattern, different from Trevor Smith. But you're fundamentally identical in the absolute eternal chaos. There you are not discriminated. Here you are discriminated. And it's your discrimination. This means two, doesn't it? And the crim means creation. Discriminate means apart, creating. You have manifested through a series of choices becoming John Garrett, manifestly. Trevor has manifested becoming Trevor, manifestly, which shows a preference in you for John Garrettness and Trevor for Trevor Smithness. Yes? And the tendency of the egoic self is to affirm its own self is better than other selves. Otherwise it would have no ground to prefer it. And when you said value, you said a word with the V-A-L, which is V-O-L, volition. You said you will value.
Yes.
You will to believe that John Garrett is better than Trevor Smith.
No, I wouldn't make that evaluation.
No, I'm making it for you. I'm making it for you. That in the place where you are, you have preferred John Garrett. If I were to say to you, tell me truthfully, if I, Frankenstein, by a little switch of nerves here and there, could Trevorize your brain box, would you be so happy with it?
A bit of a war.
A bit of a war, yes. You prefer you to Trevor in your place. At the same time, you prefer Trevor in his place.
Yes.
I love Trevor in his place. Like I love Peter in his place. I love everybody in their place. When Jesus says, I go to prepare a place for you, he's telling his disciples there, if you understand this game, you can have a unique place where you can be yourself, Johnny, or Trevoring, or whatever. Make means substantial lock. Yeah? That's all it means. And the substance is power. Substance is power. You know that from fundamental physics now, don't you? There is no matter other than energy behaving as matter. The fundamental substance of reality is power. Formally, but not powerfully. It can admit degrees, it can admit formal differences, but power remains power. And that power is sentient. So it's the self positing power. And it posits John there and Trevor there. And it posits that John prefers John there to Trevor there, and prefers Trevor there to there. It prefers everybody else to be where they are elsewhere, while I'm being me here. Yes? Preference means that before the fact you essentially make it. To prefer is to do it beforehand,
like the dot.
Now, we wouldn't be individuals unless there were a preference for individuality. Well, God is no fool. And He, the omnipotent omniscient, has made these differences. So they must have a utility to Him. Our unique individuality is valuable to God. That's the meaning of the parable of the prodigal son. Naughty boys have more interesting tales than exceptionally good boys. Right? So we are all self-assertors by divine fiat.
Yes, all
before
one.
So our absolute egotism is a divine command to be so. In order to exhaust the possibility of an investigation. And the word sin is a translation in the English Bible of a Greek word that means missing the mark. The mark for any being is pure individuated self-determination. And when you're purely self-determined, you are not reactive to external stimulus, so that you're wholly, purely you. And if everybody in the universe are wholly, purely themselves, individually, that would enrich the world that God makes. So we have a duty to be individually what we are, uniquely. Divinely imposed. We must be our unique self, not our copy self. I don't want to sit up all night studying how to be a second Scargill. I'm quite happy that he's being that there. I don't even want to be a McGregor. I don't want to be anything that you could throw things at. Right, now we're going to examine time. We can make these bends. This represents eternity as a plane of being. Now there's a very old diagram of the human spine, very simple. It goes like that. That's a primitive drawing of the human spine. The Egyptians have a rather more formulated thing, more naturalistic, for the same thing. But in Oriental masonry, you would cut this into 33 segments, and they would correspond with 33 bones in the human spine. Now, in the beginning, that's how many there are, and then some fused together. So you say 7 cervical and 12 thoracic and 5 lumbar and so on. You reduce them, but you start with 33. And that 33 is 3 times 11, isn't it? And the 11 means 1 over 10. It means the individual over an ordinal system. Your body is an ordinal system. Your heart beats, your liver works, we hope, your kidneys work. And over it, there is a consciousness, which in the psalm is called My Lord. My Lord that orders me about, and the Lord that orders cosmos about. The Lord said to my Lord, the universal Lord or principle of order, says to this local being, order, the Lord said to my Lord, sit still till I make your enemies your footstool. All the impulses in you that keep breaking your unity. And they do. You have a physical body reactivity, an emotional reactivity, a time mentational reactivity, conceptual reactivity, volitional interference within the field of consciousness. And it's very difficult to balance them all. And until we are balanced, we haven't consummated our days. Now, we have this drawing of the spine. And if we say, let's put a man's head on the top there. We'll have a pelvis down here. Now, some of the nerves that come out here control sexuality and food appetite and so on. The ones on the larynx control your verbalization capacity. And you have total representation of every stage in the spine inside the head in small. That's like a little universe, and the body is like a middle universe, and the whole cosmos is a big universe. So we call the body itself a mesocosmos, and a microcosmos in your brain, and a megacosmos for the cosmos, and for an infinity of those a megalocosmos. But it's also order within order within order. Now the sexual nerves down here have evolved a long, 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 long time ago, very closely with the food ones, because if we don't eat, we can't breathe. And once upon a time, consciousness was down there. And what we call rising through the planes is the elevation of consciousness from this genital area gradually up the spine. As we rise up, we pan out the nerves sideways like this, and put them in the body like this to give orders from each level like that. Now, at the bottom level, we are driven by primordial appetite and the will to survive, eating and sexuality. Yeah? And the consciousness is very low in the spine for those. And each little plexus in the body has a little brain of its own. Just like the solar plexus is a brain, which is developed in the great saurians for controlling the tail and the back legs, 80 feet long being. Now, when you come up to the level of the heart there, you have a feeling of your whole relation with other beings. And when you come up to the larynx, you have a feeling of capacity for verbalizing. Now, this verbalizing is the most important thing there is. Just as it says in the Gospel of John, in the beginning was the Logos, the Word. Without the Word, nothing was made that was made. Now, a word is a sound, is it not? And you know that sound vibrations produce geometrical figures on a plate of glass, the so-called Chladni figures. You know there's an unbreakable relationship between sound and form, and that you can actually shatter the form of a human being. This is done experimentally, electromagnetically. You broadcast a beam radio wave at Peter here, and you can shatter his nervous system. I mean, break it in bits by electromagnetic vibrations. They've killed monkeys with it, so why not Peter? It can't be much more difficult, can it? So we suggest to Peter that he does not sleep on his electric blanket while it's switched on. I mean that. Now, if you don't turn it off, and you know, John, perfectly well, you cannot insulate the field when a current is running along the wire. So when you lie on an electric blanket, you are creating a field outside the windings of the blanket, yes, which is interfering with your nervous distribution in your nervous system. It can make you ill. Yeah? All right, that's just one of the ways of doing it. But with beam radio, you can shatter somebody's brain process and kill them in a matter of seconds by electromagnetic vibrations. It's one of the more sophisticated modern weapons. Well, most of the fellows that do the work are more likely to know where you are than you are to know where they are. So, now this question is rising through the planes. This represents one of the planes. Yeah? And when we come into being, we come down from eternity into the being through the brain and down the spine like that until we finish up in the reproduction center down there. And that's called descending through the brain. Now, when we descend, we insert a certain amount of energy from eternity into the time process. Now, whatever level you think of in meditation is the level from which you gather the energy that you're going to posit in your body. So if you have universal compassion, you harmonize your own nervous system and cells. And if you hate, you also hate yourself. There's no way whereby you can have an inimical thought, a damaging thought about another being, without producing a corresponding damage in yourself. So, in this Oriental Masonry, we have a 33-level being. And we divide that into three basics: thinking, feeling, willing. And then we subdivide each one 11. And then to keep it very simple, put it on the hand. You see your hand, little finger, physical body, ring finger, emotion, middle finger, time thinking, index finger, conceptual, eternal proposition, thumb, volition, palm, consciousness itself. And then each finger has three, a below, above, and a middle, doesn't it? So you can begin to multiply the symbology. But to keep it simple, you say, I'm going to write, I'll put it here like this, and there is the thumb, there is the middle finger, ring finger, little finger, index finger. There's the hand, right? Now the symbology is this. Mercury on the little finger, symbolizing materiality, come mass, come Mercury. The sun on your ring finger for life force, liking and disliking. Saturn on your middle finger for time, Saturn, Kronos, time thinking. Jupiter on your index finger for universal concepts, Venus on the thumb for drive, primordial push, and a triangle occurs here in the palm, and we'll put Mars in there, and then we'll put the moon in its three phases on this little finger side of the palm. We've now disposed the so-called seven planets as symbols upon the hand. And we remember these, and they aid us to control our own responses by self-observation within a field of time presentation. So we now put the thing down like this, standing on little finger, ring finger, index and thumb, and the middle finger is like the head of an animal in time. That's a quadruped. We are led by the time stimulus, as by the nose. In the fallen state, in the Revelation it says the number of man and of the beast is the same, 666. Six for thinking, six for feeling, six for willing. And that the number of the beast and the man is the same for the fallen man. The man who behaves like a quadruped, his breath goes down to the ground even as the beast. But the moment man remembers that he originates in eternity, and eternity does not mean a loss of time. Time is serial presentation of the contents of eternity. Eternity is hey trinity, threefold life, power, form, function, timeless. But it breaks into the time as manifestations of deeds, based on emotions, based on thinkings, based on purposings. Now all these processes are within every individual, down to the smallest microbe, virus, the flea. William Blake's drawing of the cell of the flea. The flea also thinks and feels and wills. So there's the sheep. So there's an intellectual. So there's an Einstein. But it's all the same process for all beings. It's called Panchakarma. Fivefold creation, where the five are evolutes of the palm. The fingers grow out of the palm in the embryonic development. Your five senses grow out of the one sense you call common sense, common to the five. Now when you know that, you can examine your own self physically to see what you're doing physically, emotionally to see what your like-dislike is, mentationally to see how you're thinking about time events, conceptually how you're thinking about eternally true control concepts, volitionally what is your intent now, and consciously in the field embracing those five together. Did you say zeal?
Yes.
Well, zeal is an extra energy input into a situation. Yes. Well, that's the center, the triangle in the center there is energy. All energy is triple, that is power, form, function. And it simply spreads out so that under your knuckles you have three sections on each finger, don't you? And the lower part, nearest the palm, corresponds with your belly, the middle part with your chest, and the top part with your head. But it's all energy. So everything we do is energy. And when we know this, we begin to watch inside our own being for responses from all levels. Now to do that, we must become conscious of the meaning of consciousness. What does it mean if I say to you, John, be conscious of your physical body now? And now switch consciousness from your physicality to whether you like it or not. Well, you're aware of your body already, aren't you? What does it mean to become aware of your like and dislike? We call this the awareness of the aesthetic. I like it, I dislike it. Right? And what does it mean if you decide to think about your position in time as a physical body with feelings of like and dislike?
What it means that you
And what does it mean if you have a governing concept of eternal validity? Yes?
Yeah.
Like the concept of absolute interpenetration of all beings.
What does it feel like?
Right. That means fundamentally you are for it and recognize it to be something to do with the persistence of your being.
Yes.
Yeah. And when you feel about consciousness as consciousness, in the reflexive act of consciousness, reflective self-consciousness, what's that like? You don't think about your body or your emotion or your time or your concept or your will, merely the fact of consciousness of consciousness.
Well, it's an invitation or interplay of individual words.
Well, it's certainly an opportunity for interplay of everything. Now, you're rising into the plane of being when you move from little finger up to palm through the other fingers and thumb. Four of them are horizontal and the thumb is at right angles to it. Four are really all under passivity law. Physical body is passive to stimuli. Emotional field, passive. Time thinking, passive to time stimuli. Concepts, passive to universal concepts. Volition, passive to the opportunity to change. Consciousness itself is the origin of all of them. And the initiator, the will, is within the field of awareness, isn't it? When we put the doubt there, we did so by an act of volition. But before the volition that put the doubt there, we have the field of awareness, don't we? Yeah. Now the fall is when you forget to be conscious and you don't notice that you're willing to do something, you don't notice that you've chosen a governing concept, and you go under a time stimulus of an emotion from a body stimulus, and you crash into identification with the body. And if you stay down there, you're equivalent to being a mineral. Yeah. Mineral, vegetable, animal, human, superhuman or heroic, angelic, and the space in which these six are is divine. And you can choose whether to go up or down this ladder. This is Jacob's ladder. The human spine is Jacob's ladder. And messages go from the brain down and from the body up. And a messenger is called an angel. The word angel means messenger. So nerve impulses going up and down the spine are called angels rising and descending the Jacob's ladder. If you're outside time, you're in eternity and you have nothing serial to say. Angels inbreak like this in order to say something at that point to be received by this other point. And there's an inbreak into that human being there. And the point where it comes into the fontanelle there, goes through the skull into the brain, that point is an angel. A message. All the messages come from eternity into time.
Does the angel coming to speak make its own reception at that point?
No. It leaves it to the incarnate consciousness to respond to the angel. Because there must be an agreement. Otherwise, man would be a puppet. Man is free to make a decision whether to believe the angel or not.
So the angel speaks to an existing
person. But an angel is a definite amount of power, form, function, energy, with a definite intent to come from eternity into the time process. An angel is not a fiction. It's a definite amount of power, intelligently formed and actively trying to give you a message so that you can either accept it or reject it.
That's when we say we have an illumination or something, a clarification occurs, and we have to see it.
Right. So you might suddenly get a flash of insight for which apparently you have not worked. That's an angelic inbreak.
Oh,
you have worked.
We met that point.
But that has not made the thing happen. Grace makes it happen. It's a gift. But if you don't work, you may not get the gift. It doesn't mean that you won't, because God can give you a gift even if you don't work. And that's to set at nothing those people that think you can only get good things by working for them. You see, if you think that all the good things you've got are dependent on your work, you become conceited. You can say, thank God I'm not as other men. I have worked for what I've got. And you ignore grace. The ability to work is already grace. You see, essentially, the whole thing is simple. There is an absolute self which is infinite. If that self does not kill itself, it abides alone. Kill means lock. That means create. So it gets it only its only begotten son is itself locked up. That's the messianic self.
What is
locked? The power of the infinite sentient power imposes locking on itself in order to become manifest. As in the Quran it would say, I was a hidden treasure. I desired to manifest myself, therefore I created the world. If I don't create, I don't manifest. And the marvelous things I could do are not done if I don't do them. But if I do them, I am doing them. It is I myself in the doing. But I must not forget that it is I myself doing it. Otherwise I fall into thinking something is being done without my I positing it.
Is that comparable?
You can compare anything. You can make it relevant. The whole thing about creativity is this. Nothing is unconnected with everything else. It's up for you to see a connection and make a connection if there isn't one. Because if there isn't one, it's because you've unmade the one that was. In the primordial chaos. Remember, chaos is not disorder. It's an infinity of simultaneously presented orders.
It's all there.
It's all there.
So the seed falling to the ground, when it says that unless the seed falls to the ground...
It abides alone. Now that... Seed is the spirit.
So the spirit incarnates.
Itself.
Mm-hmm. And when the baby is born, where is the protestation from? Is it from the protoplasm which has become enlivened with spirit, or is it from spirit crying out in pain?
You mustn't be dualistic. Matter is spirit reduced to the least possible initiative.
Yeah.
Pure spirit is pure initiative. Matter is inertia. But when the spirit posits an inertia, that inertia stands as matter. It's a resistance. There aren't any resistances other than spirit setting itself up as resistant to its own initiative.
So at conception, then spirit condenses and then takes from the mother what it requires to produce its own substantial body.
And there's a dialogue, because the mother may like or dislike the baby. I mean, about 80% of babies are abortion attempts that failed. I'm talking about statistics now. So the mother has an opinion, the baby has an opinion, the father has an opinion, society has an opinion, and the baby's in the middle of those opinions, and they're all fighting.
Now the seed hasn't fallen to the ground, has it?
It falls at the point of conception. It goes through a four opium tube. That's not accidental, it's not an idle joke. To get from the ovary to that tube, there's a gap. It's a genuine fall. But the word fall and pawl are the same word. P-A-L-L, pawl, covering. It covers itself. You are essentially a being of sentient power, absolute. Now, if you remain at that level, you are non-manifest. So that you have to get into a body which is appalling. It's a covering. And it wraps up your essential self in a substantial inertia, subjected to stimuli from its mother, from the environment, the conditions in the womb, the agreements or disagreements of mother and father and everybody else. The field of that child is within the field of the total human situation. Yeah? But it is appalled. It is covered by the mere fact of becoming a fertilized entrant being. It seizes the sperm and ovum as they come together. It is the third force that unites sperm and ovum. And that is a real being with a real intent. But it has the intent of the mother, the father, society at large, battling with it. Some of them come in and they look around and they go back immediately. Yeah.
To an ever greater degree.
Yeah.
Isn't that also the seed falling to the ground?
It's all seed falling to the ground. So every time you put an energy into a physical act, even like bending one finger, that's the seed, the spirit, different seed. Yeah. The D is a door, Dalit. Seed the door. There we are, the plane of eternity, the bend. Yes?
Yes.
You see the door there. That seed. Seed means spirit going through the door. If I draw you a little spirit, condensed like this. Yes? And that little thing there belongs there. And it's come down there, it will fall to the ground, lie down there, and it'll come up like this, won't it? And it will make an oak tree. Yes? Was the oak tree in the acorn?
Yes.
No. The oak tree was in the field with the acorn. And the acorn is a condensation of the numinal oak tree, put into the ground to pick up matter to manifest itself with. The numinal oak is there in eternity. So it's the numinal acorn.
The individual oak tree.
Yes.
Well, let me ask the question this way. Can the true individual oak tree begin to grow until man fulfills his days? Because until he fulfills his days...
You've disguised that same question as before. You're still making the same statement you made before. I can't do it before I do it. You've disguised the statement. You're saying I can't do it until I do it. The oak tree is noumenal and the acorn is noumenal and so is everything else. But in order to get into the earth body, to get the mass inertia to repeat the experiment till you become incarnate, embodied, suddenly convinced that you are you by overcoming the resistance of the material body's dictatorship. Only by overcoming the resistance do you become you. So you've got to get into the earth. Now it's no good taking a numinal oak up there and pushing that in the earth. It's not economic. The best thing to do is make an acorn, put that in the earth, and then drive through it and become an oak tree. But each oak tree is conditioned by the ground in which the acorn fell. Pardon? No, the power is a catalyst, the acorn is a form. The acorn is an objective form. The catalyst is consciousness itself. You see it, don't you? There is a tendency, which we can call prodigality syndrome, if you like, not to want to do it before we do it. You see, the longer we can stay out from eternity in the time process, the more we suffer pains, miseries, and so on.
The longer we stay out of eternity.
Yes, in time.
Now, why is it that I would have said the longer we stay out of incarnation?
You're incarnate. You don't stay out of incarnation. You're always trying to get into it. I don't see you trying to get into eternity. I see you trying to preserve yourself in time. Everything you do daily, your work and everything about you, is an attempt to preserve you in time. You don't want to get back to eternity yet. Like St. Augustine, Lord, deliver me, but not today.
You see that in me?
Oh, in everybody. You didn't invent that one. It's pretty obvious.
But is there not an intelligence in saying what Saint Augustine said, not saying that?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that a dupe? Is that a preference?
That is the dupe. That is a dupe specially appointed by eternity to make sure your prodigality doesn't back out too soon.
That's what I'm saying all along.
I know what you're saying all along. You're trying to justify remaining in the time process and saying, I can't go back to eternity until I go back. I say, of course you can't. But you're making it into a reason why you shouldn't go back. Well, that you should try to go back as quick as you can and rely on the eternal stopping you. Otherwise, you're cooperating with the wicked one, the one that wants to stay out. But its own end, it's enjoying itself in time. Now eternity is saying, when you finish messing about, come back and tell me your funny stories. Don't think you're telling me anything, I know it all. But I'd like to hear your version. Can you see how the enrichment of eternity occurs through the idiocy of temporal beings?
Yes.
Remember, idiot means layman, simply Latin for layman. And the layman is a passive being in relation to a stimulus. So we're thrown out of eternity. Some of the rabbis said we were kicked over the ramparts of heaven because we kept looking over the edge and wouldn't go down, but couldn't keep away from looking. And God's patience, like Hitler's, ran out and he booted us over the edge. But a very, very illuminated being like Lucifer didn't wait to be kicked. Now remember, in order to learn, you have to make mistakes. But you can't make a mistake deliberately. What you do deliberately is not a mistake. So you have to pray to be ignorant enough to make a mistake. And it's very hard work. It's what Nietzsche called the Umwertung aller Werte. You've got to turn everything over. It's the same as the mental mind. Whatever you thought or been taught to think as a child, forget it. When a baby comes into the world, it has no regard for anybody. Do you know that? It's totally self-willed.
And it doesn't shape, does it, very much?
No. Gets a bit bigger in the body. Yes. Now, when it comes in, it's essentially itself. But it can't be any good. It can't do anything with itself unless you first put it in jail to make it want to get out. That's the meaning of the presence of the serpent in the Garden of Eden. It's all nice, and then say, but don't eat that one. That's so you get focused on what not to do. If you weren't focused, you wouldn't do it. You'd have been lying on your back with Adam now, with fruit falling in your mouth, dreaming away, perfect, and totally ignorant of misery. You have no sympathy for the dispossessed, for the pot-bellied, starving Somalian babies. You'd have no sympathy. You wouldn't know about it. So you'd be very deficient. So you've got to be offered, but not forced, to to accept a temptation. And then when you take it, you fall. And then you suffer. And then you develop sympathy, compassion, intelligence. But that intelligence develops only in so far as your essence as a baby is covered up with civilization's attack upon you to educate you.
Only in so far as it is covered.
Yes, which it is, by society educating you.
Yes.
Education is an incorrect word there. It's indoctrination, isn't it? They cover the essential baby. The baby wants his own way. Mummy, I hate you. You didn't give me an ice cream. Mummy, I love you. You did give me an ice cream. That's baby talk. Now you've got to put the baby to bed, forcibly, when he doesn't want to go. To teach the baby discipline, to make the baby become an individual, which it isn't as a baby. And then you have to get rid of the conditioning that you imposed on the baby to re-become the baby with the full knowledge of the whole cycle. And so you become as a little child again.
That's the second birth.
Second birth. It doesn't do that, no. There is the plane of eternity, and that is sentient power itself. It simply puts a warp in it like that, and goes back. There's no duality there. You posit your object, and remember that you posited your object. That's the origin of the letter V. V is just a short form of that process. I posit myself and remember myself as positor. Beginning of a word?
Yes.
It's beginning of the word word. In the word word, you've got two of them, haven't you?
Yes. Yes.
You got two because there are two worlds.
That's
the noumenal one and the phenomenal one. That's phenomenal and that's noumenal. When you train yourself to verbalize that this idea which is in my conscience I am positing by my interest, and in return it is I who am positing it, you go back as you come in, and that's your V for development. And all you need then is the zone of activity, the differentiator, and the discriminative process whereby you shut the door or open it to an event. Right? Isn't it terribly simple? In the beginning was the word. Let's translate. In the beginning was a noumenal, phenomenal world. And the phenomena are nothing but the noumena serialized, so there aren't two. We then rotated that fact to divide the outside infinite chaos from the inside to be ordered. Included. And then we vibrate it to discriminate it, and then we categorize and separate the differences disclosed by the letter RD, a rod of measuring, or the reed with which you measure the New Jerusalem. The word word contains the whole process, just like the word logos contains the whole process. Logos is light. That's lambda, gamma, that's OG, macrocosmos, macrocosmos, issuance, that's your word logos. It's all there in the word word, in the word word, in the word vort, in memra, in shabda. Whatever word you take for word, you'll find the whole process in every language contains exactly the same information from a slightly different viewpoint. Right? Thank you.